You're listening to the No Fibs podcast. My name is Charlie Caruso, and today I'm delighted to be joined by New South Wales Senate candidate Rod Bauer.
Hi, how are you going, Charlie?
Now, I've introduced you as Rod Bauer because I know your previous life is on hold so that you can run for the Senate seat. But I did just want to make sure listeners were aware that you're more commonly known as Father Rod Bauer of the Gosford Anglican Church, of which you've made the announcement signs quite famous.
That is correct, yes. The Gosford sign guy, sometimes people refer to me.
Now, I don't really want to dive too deeply into that story about the sign, despite it being brilliant, primarily because we're here to talk about ICANN and what you guys are offering both in New South Wales voters in the Senate and across Australia. But also, there's plenty of articles, and I'll probably attach a few to the NoFib site. But, you know, it would be great if you could paint a bit of a picture for listeners about your background and what life experiences that you've had that might have led to you making the decision to run as a candidate for this election.
Well, I guess my background is quite diverse. I'm a farmer to begin with, Hunter Valley grazier, and I've worked in business and mainly the meat industry for a long time until I went was ordained as a priest back in 1992. And I've been working with the Anglican Church for 27 years as priest.
Wow.
And in particular, my interests have been in the area of human rights. So I've been a bit of a human rights activist, and I sit on a number of not-for-profit boards that are involved in the welfare sector as well. So my passion has been in the area of human rights.
And so what has it been an event or something that has led you to saying, you know what, the capacity of what I can deliver in the existing roles are no longer up to scratch, and in fact I need to take this into the political sphere? Or has it been a more gradual sort of thought process?
It's been a bit of a gradual thought process. I've been focusing in three main areas. One was the area of marriage equality. And so I was very much a part of the campaign for marriage equality, and that's obviously been a successful thing. Secondly, we've been really engaged in the asylum seeker refugee area. We've had some success in terms, especially in terms of getting kids off Nauru and raising the social conscience of the Australian people around that area. But I have to say we've found the climate area a very difficult one to get traction in terms of social change. And so it seemed that the logical progression for me would be, if I seriously wanted to do something about climate, I had to do it from Canberra. And so that was a bit of a slow evolutionary process into saying, okay, I can't do this from where I am, I have to do it from Canberra.
Well, I mean, again, I don't want to keep going back to your life or your role in the church, but the things that you're saying and sort of the things that you're passionate about, I don't know why, but it's not something that I've previously associated with, I guess, my image or idea of someone as high up as you were or play the role that you did in the community in the religious sector. Is that something that people have been shocked by?
I guess I've been so outspoken and had such a high public profile on those issues for such a long time that people just simply accept that is who I am. I guess it disturbs me really quite deeply that people in the community would have that reaction because for me, you know, what I've been on about from my perspective as an Anglican priest all my life has been issues of a just society. And I think that's really the core issue for who I was as a priest, and so to continue that in my public life, because, you know, climate change is now the biggest human rights issue we're going to face in this century.
Right.
And so for me, it's just the natural progression of my human rights activism is to now engage in the climate issue, because ultimately it's the first group of people that climate change affects is the poor and the marginalised.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is it's a human rights issue. It's the climate change is going to produce more refugees in this century than we have produced in all the wars put together for the last 10 centuries. And so ultimately, this is the big issue.
It sure is. And this happens to be the election for it, with many citing, you know, this is the climate change election. You've come in under the Independence for Climate Action Now as a party. Can you tell me a little bit about party and how it came to be?
It's a little confusing, isn't it, I guess, when you start talking about a party of independence. And so it actually does require some explanation, I think. I started to think about how I might run for the Senate 6 or 8 months ago. And in New South Wales in particular, it is impossible to be elected as an independent senator in New South Wales. Just because of the size of the electorate, there's over 4.5 million voters. It's much more possible in the ACT or, say, Tasmania.
Because
the population, you've got to get such a small, smaller percentage of the, not the same percentage of the vote, but a smaller number of votes. And so clearly, if I was going to do this, there had to be another way. I explored a couple of different ways that just didn't resonate with me ethically. And so I had decided not to run. Then I was approached by ICAN, Independence for Climate Action Now. I went and met with them. I was comfortable with their ethics. I was comfortable with their policy stand. And I was excited about the model because we are in an evolutionary process, I think, in the Australian politic. I think postmodernism will mean that the two major party system will begin to fall apart. That's just what happens, because in a postmodern world, institutions are just not, people just aren't interested in institutions, and political parties are institutions. Mm-hmm. And so there is an independence movement beginning. And I think to have a coalition of independents that for the purposes of, the electoral process is a party, is part of that evolutionary process. Now, that may be not where we end up, in a few election cycles, but it's an exciting part of that evolutionary process. And I'm just so excited to be on the green, in on the ground floor of this evolution towards more independent politicians and a more independent politique.
I couldn't agree more, and I haven't told you this, but I've actually written a few articles well before I'd even heard of Independence for Climate Action Now about, you know, the idea of independents joining forces to not only share resources so that they have a greater chance of winning seats, but just from a strategical perspective. And it's something that I knew conceptually would work, and then we later discovered, obviously, that ICAN and to a certain degree Centre Alliance, who also have conscious voting. I did want to explore a little bit why that's important for anyone that might not necessarily understand that. And from my perspective anyway, a lot of it comes down to the ability to make conscious votes and to vote either directly according to the electorate,
or because of, evidence-based policy dictates that that's the right decision to make.
Unfortunately, in a lot of cases with the two-party system, you are more often than not having to vote in a line with what the cabinet have said.
Yes.
And there are many occasions where we have representatives having to publicly sell policies that they've actually voted many times against behind closed doors. Why do you think that ability to vote with your own conscience and autonomously is so important in both the Senate and to a degree in the lower house?
I think it's interesting. I was looking at the smart vote thing from ANU the other day, and looking at a candidate that I know very well. And I looked at their answers, and I thought, if you actually answered this honestly, you wouldn't vote for yourself.
Right.
You would actually vote for a candidate that was much further to the right than you are purporting to be in your party. And so I think people are hungry for integrity. I think people are really sick of the spin of the nonsense that goes on. And we got pretty good bullshit detectors, really. And we hear a politician on the news and we think, you don't believe what you're saying. And so I think there's a real hunger for people to be in politics who actually believe what they're saying, stand firmly with their conscience and are honest before the election, say, this is where I stand, this is what I believe. And I think ICANN have given the opportunity for a good number of people to do this. We've gathered together on the climate issue, but on other policies, we have, there is a broad spectrum of thought within ICANN on a number of other issues, but we come together on science-based, evidence-based response to climate change. And so I can say to the people of New South Wales, my commitment to you is to look after your interests, or our interests as the people of New South Wales, through the lens of evidence-based, science-based policy, that when policy, when legislation comes to the upper house in the Senate, that I will be looking at that through the lens of climate science in the interest of people of New South Wales and I guess the rest of the country and in fact the world. We need climate informed legislation. We need climate informed policy. The other thing, of course, for me is my great passion for human rights, and I will be looking at legislation through the lens of our agreements, international agreements on human rights. The Refugee Convention, for instance, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, because I think we've signed these agreements and we need to be people of honour, and we need to honour what we've signed. So they'll be the two main things the people of New South Wales can guarantee that I will represent them in.
It's actually quite exciting listening to you talk, and I think you're right that there is a hunger for integrity, but I think also a hunger for authenticity. And it's very hard if you're part of one of the majors to get up on screen and talk to a question or on a subject, because what we see is the lack of authenticity, because they're thinking about, right, what am I allowed to say? What's going to get me in trouble? And getting in trouble really for them means potentially losing power and losing their seat. So
yes,
layers and layers of self-interest to keep being chosen for that side and keep playing the game so that you rank. But really fundamentally what's stripped away is the ability to think and speak your own mind. And so then when it comes election time, right, and they're trying to sell themselves, they're actually only ever selling a few very small numbers within a party who are easily influenced. So I think the departure from that towards, as I said, people like yourself who are known, well known in the community, who have the freedom and track record of saying what they think and acting on what they say, is actually, it's quite an exciting revelation, I guess, in politics.
Yes, and I guess I've been around long enough and had enough of a public profile, and people can go back over a long period of time and read what I've said and listen to what I've said. And if they do that, they will know that I will always do the right thing. No matter what, I will always do what is right. As far as my conscience and my information will allow me to do, I'll make decisions that I believe are the right thing. And we so often see politicians bound by party politics doing things that we only got to look at their face, and we know that they know it's not the right thing. And yet they're doing stuff. And I think that's where that integrity and that authenticity, and I'm not saying I'm any more moral or ethical than anyone else in politics. My heart goes out sometimes to some of these politicians, who many of whom I know quite well, when I know they're voting against their conscience, and I know they actually don't feel okay about it. They feel really bad about that. And I guess that's what independence brings. It allows you to do the right thing all the time, because you just don't have that pressure on you from the party machine dragging you away from your conscience.
Absolutely. I give the analogy quite often. It's the disruption that we've seen across tech sectors or lots of different models, whether it be what
You know, the kind of disruption that even iPhones and smartphones did on telecommunications, or say Uber in transport, any of those that sort of sought to find a gap and a better solution or user experience for an existing institution that really just wasn't doing it. And so taxis are a great example in that. But the fact remains that independents still have to function within the existing, how I'd call it, a dysfunctional operating system of Parliament. How will the people from New South Wales or Australians as a whole benefit from having you elected in the Senate? What power or impact can you have in that role?
Of course, that will always depend on the makeup of the Senate. It always depends on the numbers, where the balance of power is. It's fairly obvious at this stage that we'll have a majority Labor government in the lower house. Mm-hmm. And so it's so important now then that people put some independence into the upper house who can hold that government to account and to drag them across the line, especially on the climate stuff, because while the Labor Party, you know, has slightly better policies than the Liberal Party in terms of climate, it's going to make no material difference in the end about climate change. So we need climate-informed and committed independence in the Senate to drag, and it can be done. The Labor Party will be dragged across the line on this because I think they can see, well, I know they can see, this new evolution in Australian politics going on with independence. This is the beginning of something that is going to continue. And they know that if by the end of this election cycle in 3 years' time, if they have not made significant inroads into climate policy that has real effect, then in the coming election in 3 years' time, they will be in a minority government with the balance of power being held by climate independence. Now, that is what is going to happen in this evolutionary process. And that is the power that we have. Even if we aren't in Parliament, and I hope we will be, but even if we aren't, we have the power now of the evolutionary process, and it is clear where that is going. And so that's the power to affect policy, even if you're not in Parliament. And this is what's so exciting about this movement. Even if we're not in Parliament, we still have the power to affect policy because they're not stupid. They know where this is going.
Well, they know where it's going, and that almost makes me think that they are stupid because of that.
Well, there's that level. It's kind of a psychological denial process that happens in individuals and in groups. We can see where this is going. We're going to pretend it's not happening for as long as we can, but we know eventually that we're going to have to address it. That's kind of where we're up to now. In 3 years' time, we're going to be in a totally different place. And so we're in on the ground floor of an evolutionary process that is just so exciting. And it is the only thing that is going to save us ultimately from the devastation of the climate emergency.
I think you're right. I think you're 100% right. And in the end, it's not politically sexy or appealing, is probably a better word, to sell action on climate change for the simple reason it's probably going to mean sacrifices to perhaps the way of living for a short period of time so that we could work together to get the levels down that we need to do. And any conversation around potentially going to have to change our lifestyle or make change is perhaps one of the core reasons why the majors are steering a little bit further away from being as tough as perhaps we might like them to be. And I'd argue that that's exactly why we need people like yourself, other ICANN or other, climate positive or climate campaigning independent is to drive that conversation, is to continue to keep them accountable, and also to be fighting on behalf of Australians and our future.
And the other thing about the independence is I'll speak from a Senate perspective. Certainly it's about reviewing legislation, it's about making legislation better, it's about having a climate-informed legislation, all of that. But that's only part of what political leadership is about. Political leadership is also about cultural change. And, you know, as a change agent in the world's oldest institution, I've learned how hard that can be. And there's a saying we use as change agents that culture eats strategy for breakfast. Right. So you can have all the strategies you like, but if you don't change the culture, if you don't affect the culture, you don't get anywhere. So you can, in some ways, you know, have good legislation, but if you're not changing the culture around climate awareness, then you still won't get to where you need to go. So part of what people are also hungering for is good political leadership.
Right.
People have a vision of where we want to go and how we're going to get there. I think people are hungering for that. And that is what some of the independents are able to offer, in a way that people who are bound by the party machine can't offer that, because there's always that little bit of lack of authenticity. Mm-hmm. People are looking for authentic visionary leadership that changes culture and that delivers an outcome that is going to, you know, create a world in which our grandchildren can flourish. And I'm now a grandfather. You know, this is what gets me out of bed in the morning, is, you know, creating a world that my grandchildren can flourish in.
Wow. So anyone in New South Wales that is listening, or people in Australia that are listening that know people in New South Wales, how do we get you elected? How would you suggest they vote come election day?
When you walk into that booth on election day and you get that huge tablecloth of a Senate paper, you go to column Q. It's kind of right in the middle. It's Independence for Climate Action Now. You'll see our ICANN logo. It's a bit of a rising sun sort of logo. That's where you start. Now, if you're going to vote above the line, you vote 1 to 6 above the line, you put ICANN first, and then your other preferred parties or groups from 2 to 6. If you're going to vote below the line, then you still go to column Q and you vote for Rod Bauer, Jim Tate and Annette Schneider in New South Wales. That's 1, 2, 3. And then from 4 to 12, your other preferred candidates below the line. The easiest way to do it is 1 to 6 above the line, column Q first, ICANN.
And you've got the How to Vote cards available, which I will make sure is on the link, at least is onto the podcast post, as well, yes, as your website, yeah, and your
online on our ICANN Twitter account, on our ICANN website, on at FR Bauer is my Twitter account. So you'll find all that information there. But just remember, column Q is the place to start. Vote one.
Rod, thank you so much for having a chat with us on No Fibs, and we wish you the best of luck in the lead up to May 18th.
Absolute pleasure. Thanks, Charlie.